You're listening to Baking to the B-Movies with Ashley and Steph, broadcasting from the woods of Western Massachusetts. They're here to talk about the beautiful, the gory, the nonsensical, and of course, mostly bad horror filmmaking that we all know and love, while creating recipes inspired by these wonderful abominations. You can follow Baking to the B-Movies on Instagram, at Baking to the B-Movies, and on Twitter, at Baking to B Movies. These ladies dig deep into these movies, and some of the topics covered are disturbing. So this is your spoiler warning and explicit content warning. Listener discretion is advised. Now onward to good food, good friends, and movies so bad they literally cannot stop talking about them.
Welcome back to Baking to the B-Movies. My name is Ashley.
My name is Steph.
Thank you all so, so much for joining us again today. Always a pleasure and a privilege to be here with you, Steph, in the studio. All right, let's get the usual out of the way.
Yep.
We are available wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to like, subscribe, share, and give us a 5-star rating. We've earned it.
I would think so.
At this point, we have definitely earned it.
100%.
You can reach us directly at bakingtothebmovies@gmail.com. Give us some feedback. Give us some suggestions. Give us your recipe recommendations. We are open to all of those things. You can follow along with the season on our Instagram. That is at bakingtothebmovies. That's where we share all of our recipes and photos of our recipes. And then if you still need to catch up on any of our recent episodes, if you want to do a deep dive on any of our past episodes from previous seasons, because we have been doing this for a few years now, you can head on over to our RSS feed. That is an archive of all of our episodes, including this one when it goes live, and you can just listen directly from that feed. I think that's everything. I'm crushing it lately.
You are crushing it.
No script, nothing, just off the
I
cuff.
I know. If it was me, I'd be like,
like a Looney Tune.
I'm hunting wabbits. Yeah.
That's all, folks.
Yeah.
Steph, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm trying to, so I make a list like every season of things that I want to go and see and do and like take pictures of or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a way to motivate myself because otherwise I would just be rotting in bed or on my couch all day.
Legit,
you work a full-time job as well, but like it gets harder for me. Like, I work and I have a radio show that I do once a week,
right.
And then I have a blog that I update 3 times a week, and then
right.
Of course there's this, which this doesn't feel like work. This is fun. I really enjoy doing this.
Yeah.
But there's so many things on my plate that like at the end of a week on like a Friday at like 5 o'clock, I'm just like face down, like on my couch, just like I'm done. So I make these lists every season of things that I want to like go and see and do. And it's like things that I see floating around on social media or recommendations that friends have given me or like strangers have been like, oh, you should check this out. You'd love this. So I have this list going. I've just realized now that like, I have this like crazy unhealthy obsession with coffee and caffeine. Like I'm obsessed with
this
finding.
This isn't a new thing.
No, I was looking at my list for the summer,
yeah.
And like 98% of the list is like coffee places I want to try.
Okay.
Like there's no, like I already like banged out, like get a lobster roll at this place or whatever. Like I already did that, get oysters at this place. But now I'm just like, oh, all that's left for me to do in the summer is just like get coffee. But there's a place down on the Cape that I want to go to, and I forget the name of it. I have it written down, but they do, it's just funny because I'm sure it's expensive, but they do this latte called the Fluffy Seagull.
Okay.
And it's basically like a latte, just a regular latte, an iced latte, but they line the cup with marshmallow fluff before they pour it in. And I'm
the entire inside?
Yeah, the entire inside
Jesus.
Of the cup is like marshmallow fluff. And then like you pour the latte in and like the fluff gets mixed in with the...
Right.
And
it melts.
And I've been like thinking about it. I'm like, I want to go get a Fluffy Seagull, but I'm going to have to leave so early in the morning because it's the Cape and it takes forever and like whatever. But I was thinking about it, I'm like, I could just easily, and for a fraction of the cost, make my own. I could make my own yes. fluffy seagull.
You could.
But am I going to do that? No. I'm gonna drive 2.5 hours, pay $13 or whatever. I have no idea how much it is.
Yeah.
For this drink that I could just as easily make in the comfort of my own air-conditioned apartment. But I will not do that. And that is why I live in an apartment and not a house. That is my problem. That I am financially irresponsible because I am willing to go buy a fluffy seagull and put a down payment down on a house.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest. I mean, the housing market is a joke.
It is.
So, as I mentioned in the last episode, live the way you want. Don't let anybody say otherwise. Like, oh, you can't afford a house because you buy avocado toast to go to Starbucks every day. Like, no, actually, it's because the price of housing is a joke and, you know, wages have not gone up.
It's true. That was actually something my landlord, we were negotiating my rent this past renewal, because I've been at my apartment since 2019, and I've mentioned my landlord a handful of times on here, and I don't know if he'll ever listen to this. If he does, fix the goddamn lights in my kitchen. Like, I've been begging you to fix the lights in my kitchen for like 6 months now. But that was something that, like, he increased the rent again.
Because why not?
And it's really funny to me because when it was he and his wife that were running the apartment, because they owned a couple. Now he owns, I forget how many properties. That's what he does.
Far too many.
Yeah. And he keeps his staff very low so that he doesn't have to pay anybody. So when things get broken, it takes forever to get them fixed because he owns so many properties and he has such a small staff that they can't take care of all of that.
Right.
So when it was him and his wife, though, she was like on top of shit. And she was like, I take pride in the fact that unless it is absolutely and 100% necessary, I will not increase the rent. Because there's no reason to. We don't need to. And so for
like if there's something wrong with your apartment, that is not grounds to increase rent.
Yeah. Well, so when they got divorced and he took over the company, and I don't know whatever happened to her. I miss her. I know it sounds ridiculous to be like, I miss my old landlord, but I do. She was great. She was on top of things. She made sure things were fixed properly. She was easy to communicate with. She was easy to reach. There was no, like, pulling the wool over anybody's eyes when it came to, like, you know, this is what you pay, and, like, I'm not... So, like, my rent didn't increase for the first couple of years I was there. It was great.
Which is, yeah.
Yeah, and now there's been a steady and substantial increase, like, every year since she left. Like, literally, she left, and a month later, he's like, okay, rent's going up. And it was just like, wait, what? And he was like, the first time it was like, oh, it's because we had a really bad winter, and I had to spend so much money on salt and sand. And it's like, our lot was a mess. Like,
right, so he didn't actually do anything with the salt and sand. And, yeah, that shit went... you know, inflated just like everything else.
Yeah.
But, again, you're the landlord. That's your responsibility. Yeah. That has nothing to do with the raising.
So we got into it. We got into it in May.
Especially if you're not actually doing
it. Yeah, he does. Nothing gets fixed. And only recently did he start fixing the outside of the building, because the outside of my building, now my apartment, I take pride in the inside of my apartment because I take Yeah. It's immaculate. I take really good care of my things. Everything is clean. It's spotless. The outside, you step outside of my apartment and it is like fucking feral dogs running around. There's tumbleweeds.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the outside of my building was starting to get really, really run down, where people thought that it was fucking abandoned.
It
was bad. So he only recently just started like repainting and cleaning and redoing the stonework. And like we had a situation last summer where because we did have a homeless encampment in our parking lot for a while, and they have since left, but we had three or four active like drug users in our parking lot shooting up in our parking lot because they didn't think anybody was in the building, and they got caught and they left their needles everywhere, and that was when my landlord was like, oh, okay, I gotta do something about this. So he made it a priority to fix the outside of the building. But because he had to fix the outside of the building and repaint and everything, my rent went up again in May. And I argued it. I was like, you know, I'm not going to name him, but I'm just like, you know, the building has depreciated in value. And my apartment, with every month that goes by, like, something is falling apart. And it's wear and tear. I mean, it's not his fault. It's an old building. I lived in an old loft, like... You know, it's a building from like 18 something, you know.
Yeah.
And it's converted. Like, he did the best that he could with it. But, like, the building has depreciated in value. And yet the cost of living here, you keep jacking up the rent. Maybe you should consider getting a real job instead of, like, leeching off of the people that are looking for...
That's what their job is, though. Yeah. If you think about it.
But, so he told me...
But do a good job, and you're not.
He told me, it goes back to the, like, the wages not going up. I was like, you know, blank, my landlord. I'm like, you know, my salary has increased a little bit, but not substantial. And your increases in the rent, it puts me like in the negatives when it comes to like saving. Like, you know, I'll compromise with you, but I think that this is bullshit. This isn't like, this is unnecessary. And he came down like $5, and I was like, oh,
what does that mean? Like, what does that matter?
He's a scumbag. He's always been a scumbag. But something that he said to me, and we got into it, is he was like, well, maybe you should ask your job for more money. And I was like, maybe my job is none of your fucking business.
Right.
And maybe you should go out and get a real job as opposed to this. This is not a real job. Being a landlord is not a fucking real job. It's not a career. Like, you're a slumlord. You're not even a nice guy. Mm. At least, like, your ex-wife was, like, pleasant. Yeah. And she wasn't, like, if somebody was, not that I was ever late on rent, but I knew people that were in my building because life, you know, if they were late, she wasn't, like, eviction notice. Like, you're out of here. She'd be like, listen, get it to me when you can get it to me. Like, it's fine. Because she had a real fucking job that she went to every day. You know? Right. Like, she had, like, a 9-to-5. And then, like, on her lunch break and, like, after work, she would deal with shit at the building. Like, but I just, yeah, it's just, that was a tangent.
The last time I had to, like, I am so glad I don't have to deal with a landlord. And the last time I did, what a nightmare. Like, they're just so shitty. Like,
was this at the old condo?
Not my condo, because I didn't have a landlord there. I owned that. Okay. But it was on, when I was with Sean.
Gotcha. And, oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Bob was his name. And we'll just leave it at that. but our stove was broken for months.
Jesus.
We're like, and every time we withheld rent, he would flip his shit. And we're like, you're not fixing all these things that are happening.
Yeah. Wasn't there a hole in the ceiling that was...
That happened after I moved out, but yes.
It stayed there for months.
It's fixed now.
Yeah.
But it was months. It was there for like 2 years.
That's crazy.
I'm like, call the Better Business Bureau because, you know, well, those are still friends that, you know, I had there.
I had to do that once with my current landlord a couple years ago. I had water leaking through the ceiling and it was bubbling in my bathroom on the ceiling. Jesus. And whenever we got bad. Like, whenever we had like a heavy rain, it would like drip down onto my tile. Now I have a neighbor that lives below me, so I didn't want anything to happen to his apartment.
Right.
So I called my landlord and was like, listen, blank, you know, I have a bubble in my ceiling. It's about the size of a hubcap and it's clearly filled with water. And every time it rains, it like leaks through.
Are you the very top floor?
I'm the very top floor.
So yeah, it was the roof.
And, so he was like, all right. Like, and I told him, I was like, I'm going to Nevada for a week. So if this is something that you can get done by the time I get back, like you have free access to my apartment, like whatever, I won't be there. So I won't be in the way. Do whatever you got to do. Just make sure you lock the door on your way out. And he was like, on it. Great. And I'm like, also like there's crazy spiders all over the building. We get them every
spiders,
year. I haven't noticed any this year. I don't know if they sprayed or anything when they were doing the outside of the building to like fix everything or make it look nice. But I haven't really seen any outside the building this year. Thank God. That doesn't mean that they're not going to show up, but every year without fail, we usually get them.
You should watch Infested.
Oh God.
It's a French movie.
Yeah.
In an apartment complex and the spiders are the big bad.
Oh God.
It's actually really good.
Okay.
But you'd probably freak the fuck out.
Well, I was going to say,
but it's literally the story.
Well, I was going to say, for anyone who isn't aware, I am extremely arachnophobic, like horrifically so.
Yeah, I got to put a spider movie on the list sometime.
It's very, very bad. I hyperventilate and shit. But my building usually, and they get in because I live in the I live on the corner of the building and there's a fire escape near me. So like when people come and go out of that fire escape, like they get in.
Yeah.
And I remember telling him this and I was gone for a week in Nevada and I didn't hear from him. So I just assumed everything was fine. And when I came,
that was wrong.
when I came back, there were even more spiders in the building. But when I went into my apartment, they had started working on my ceiling, but they just left it halfway. So there's a gaping hole in my bathroom ceiling, drywall fucking everywhere. And they had taken the trash bag that they were putting all the wet, like, drywall that they cut, and they just threw it on my bed. So...
Like, in the bag?
Like, in the bag.
Okay.
So there's
still.
But still. So I got home, like, my flight was, like, a red eye. So I got home early that morning, and I'm calling him, like, calling the emergency line that he has. And I'm leaving him voicemail, and I'm sending him texts, and I'm sending our maintenance guy texts, and I'm calling him and leaving him voicemails. I'm calling the office manager. I'm just like, there's a fucking hole in my ceiling. There is drywall everywhere. There's a trash bag filled with wet drywall on my fucking bed. There are spiders everywhere. Are you all fucking kidding me right now? Like, you had a week to fix this. This is not something that's going to take a week. And he would not get back to me. So I called the Board of Health.
The BBB.
I called the Board of Health, and they sent somebody over. I'll never forget it. I let her in. First of all, she was horrified by the spiders outside my door. She was like, what the hell? And I'm like, yeah, this is what I deal with. And like, while I opened the door, like one came down in front of her, and she had to like swat. She was like freaking the fuck out. She came in. She's like looking at my, she's looking at the hole in my ceiling, like her jaw's open. She's looking at the trash bag on my bed and like just like white as a sheet, like horrified. But then she was pointing out other things that I didn't even notice. She was like, well, that's a violation. Well, that's a violation. I'm like, oh, me? And she's like, no, your landlord. Like, that is a fucking violation. Like, he should not have that set up that way. So she filed this full report and basically gave him till the end of the week to get that shit fixed. And he was in there, I think, like the next day repairing my ceiling. It lit a fire under his ass.
You know, it makes me wonder, like, if these landlords just don't think that their tenants are going to actually actively pursue such a thing.
Oh, I'll ruin your fucking life.
I know you will, but I'm wondering if they're just underestimating tenants because, like, I kept telling, you know, in my old apartment, the residents there, to call the Board of Health because of the ceiling and this and that, and then we had, like, no stove for 3 months, and things like that. Yeah, same bullshit, you know, like you need to fix this or we're going to withhold rent. We withhold rent and then there's a huge freaking problem. Or like, oh, well, we're taking this off of the rent because we had to pay for it ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, huge freaking problem. And it's like, you guys don't actually, like, I don't think they think that their tenants are going to have the gall to either call the Board of Health or take things off the rent. So when it happens, it's like a huge, like, shot to the face for them.
Well, that's what happened this morning.
And it's like, you don't think this would you think this is acceptable?
Yeah. That's what happened this morning is I had to have our maintenance guy come and fix the AC.
Right.
And I had requested it days ago because I noticed the issue days ago. Now, my AC was working, but after about like 10 minutes of it running, there would be like this rattling noise. And it
sounds like my car.
It was distracting. You know, because I keep my AC on like pretty low, like all night. It helps me sleep.
It's summer.
Yeah.
It's hot.
Well, that was the thing is like, so I'd be like falling asleep and all of a sudden you hear like da 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 da, and it's like this metallic rattling sound. And I let him know and I'm like, listen, like this has to be fixed sooner than later. I don't want to be put on like a wait list. Like this needs to get fixed. It's like 93, 94 degrees and I need the AC on. Like I can't sit in here and sweat to death while I'm working from home. Like I need you to fix this. This is something that needs to get fixed now. And it took him, like, he just, yeah, I'm on top of it. Yeah, I'll get there. Yeah, I'll send so-and-so. And he never did. So finally, I told him, you know, this morning, I messaged him, and I was like, this needs to be fixed now, because if I have to hire somebody to fix it, that's coming out of my rent. I'm not paying that to you, because it's coming out of my own pocket. Like, I'll send you. I said, or I'll send you the receipt, and you can pay me.
Like, this is the reason to rent, is because you don't have to worry about that bullshit?
Yeah.
However, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because the general public of landlords are terrible.
Yeah. Well, no sooner did I say, as soon as like I threatened his money or his or implied that like he would have to reimburse me for out of pocket expenses, who should show up today to fucking fix it? Now
sure
it's
enough.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, that's crazy. That's crazy that you were able to get here and fix it. Like wild.
Weird. Yeah.
So, but anyway, I'm going to go get a fluffy seagull.
Oh, that sounds so sugary.
I know. It's going to be, I'm sure it's probably going to be gross because I don't even like marshmallow fluff, but I just think it's such a cute concept.
You don't even like fluff and you're going to do it.
Hell yeah.
All right, cool.
Well,
I can dig it.
So before,
you do you, girl.
Before we do you have any things on your summer bucket list this year? Anything you want to do or see or go?
Get out of the house.
Well, we're going to be doing that soon.
That's my list, yeah. I mean, my summers are pretty low-key.
Yeah.
You know? Like, we'll go out, do some yard sailing, we'll go kayaking.
Nice.
Shit like that.
There's a place in Orange that I heard about that does kayaks, and they had a cute name, and I can't remember it. It's like Billy's Boat... Billy's Boats Bluff or something like that. It's something weird like that. But
I'm going to look that up. But we have our own kayak.
Oh, okay, nice.
So we just go to wherever we feel like around here.
Nice.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about that nonsense.
I have a whale watch on my bucket list for the summer.
Yes, I would love to.
I hate calling it a bucket list because it just sounds really like morbid, like I plan on dying, but I don't. But it is on my summer to-do list as a whale watch. I also want to go up to Storyland because I had told you earlier they do a 21 plus night. So after hours, after the park closes for kids, the adults can go and drink and ride those like dangerous ass rickety rickety rides
from like the 60s
from the
or whatever
60s
the
that
are,
have
yeah.
not been upgraded or meet any kind of minimum safety protocols. Like I kind of want to plan like a trip up to New Hampshire because I wanted to do Storyland and then I wanted to do Santa's Village. Did you go to any of those when you were a kid? Like any of those?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I wanted to do that. I actually have the list on my phone right now. But that was like on the list. Whale watch, obviously. What else? Oh, I wanted to go to the Museum of Ice Cream in Seaport in Boston because they have an entire swimming pool that's filled with sprinkles. Not that I want to...
It's a Museum of Ice Cream?
It's new. Yeah, they had it in New York and they just opened one in Boston. And I don't want to go in the swimming pool filled with sprinkles because that's going to be like the ball pit that we talked about at Chuck E. Cheese and Willy's Wonderland where you're going to get out of there with like shingles.
All sorts of crazy
but
shit.
It's one of those things like where you just want to go and like see it in person. Like a pool filled with sprinkles. I want to see that. That's worth the trip to Boston to me is to see a fucking swimming pool filled with sprinkles, filled to the brim with sprinkles, and then watch kids diving into it. Hilarious.
So you can dive into it.
Apparently you can go in it.
Gross.
It is gross.
That would be gross.
It's disgusting. Yeah. But like I just want to see it.
Okay.
I want to see it. We should go. Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway. So I'm excited for today's movie, not only because it's shorter than our last episode's movie was. We did Scream a couple weeks ago and that movie's like nearly 2 hours long and we talked about it for nearly two hours because we love it so much. This movie is significantly shorter, but it's very, very fun. But before we do that, I had made Dunkaroos and I wanted to know what you thought because we ate them and
I thought it was very good. My cookie snapped off in the frosting.
As is tradition. As is the Dunkaroo tradition.
Yep. It tasted like the frosting specifically tasted exactly how I remember it.
Yes.
You know, it had the sprinkles in it. It looked exactly how I remember it.
Yes.
So it was pretty good.
I'm so
excited.
A little
sugar overload. Give me some energy.
Yeah, I was going to say, you had so much energy.
Right? I'm ready to crash.
Well, thank you. That recipe is over on our Instagram for anybody who didn't see it. You can follow
it. Very nostalgic.
Yeah, you can follow it step by step. Not that it's particularly, it's cookies and fucking cream cheese frosting that you make with sugar and cream cheese and vanilla. Like, it's not, and sprinkles. Don't forget the sprinkles. That's like the Dunkaroos. Can't remember ever having a Dunkaroo that didn't have sprinkles in the frosting.
Yeah, probably not. I'm trying to remember. But.
And also, if you're looking for the packages that are in the photos, I got them at Target. So I'm just going to lay that out there. You can get them at Target. I'm sure they have them on Amazon as well, but I just got them at Target. They stack up, like they snap together. Super convenient. Highly recommend. And you can put other things in them, not just Dunkaroos.
Like that is true.
You do like hummus and chips.
Oh, yeah.
Pepperoni and cheese. Nuts and what do you eat with nuts?
Other nuts?
Olives.
Yeah,
I don't know why I said that. That was gross. I mean,
it makes sense in a charcuterie board.
Yeah, I'm thinking protein packs. That's all.
Yeah.
So, Steph, this week's movie, I actually think this might be the oldest movie that we've done so far.
So, thus far, yes.
We've done movies from the 70s, we've done movies from the 80s, but this movie is like, this one goes way, way back. And
further back than the 70s.
Yeah, and it has been reimagined and redone
a few times,
but this one I think is a true B movie.
It is.
And I'm very excited to talk about it, and I know that you are as well, because we get an appearance from someone in their debut role.
Yeah.
Like the first movie ever, and it was crazy to see him in this. At such a young age and still being just an absolute creep.
Right? Oh my God.
Do you want to tell the audience what we're talking about today?
Yes. So, just like last episode, we headed to California. We're heading back to California, except this time we're going to a place specifically described as Skid Row.
So all of Los Angeles?
Basically. If you don't know what I'm talking about, which I assume if you probably do, we're going to The Little Shop of Horrors. Although I don't think it's called The Little Shop of Horrors. I think it's just Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes.
I'm not sure. But this is the original Roger Corman gem. R.I.P. Mr. Corman. We lost him last year, I want to say.
I believe so,
He was 99.
My goodness.
Yeah.
That's always a shame when they can't quite make it to 100.
Yeah, it was like Betty White, too, I think. Yeah. She was like, what, within a month of hitting 100?
I think so, yeah. And, yeah. Ugh, that sucks.
Yeah. And Roger Corman has, like, I don't know, 200-300 movies under his belt or something insane. Yeah, he's basically the B-movie king. Doing it from, like, the 30s.
So this is from 1960. And it is 1 hour and 10 minutes, which is, you know, obviously far less than the 1 hour and 50 minutes that Scream was.
Indeed.
And the cast on this, it's pretty small. A lot of, like, crazy side characters, but the main cast is pretty small. Do you want to talk about the cast?
Sure. I mean, I'm not very familiar with most of these actors.
Same.
Because this movie was originally made in 1960. I'm more familiar with the 1986 version of musical, which I love.
With Rick Moranis.
But we have Jonathan Hayes. He plays Seymour Crowboyne. Mm-hmm. We have Jackie Joseph, who's Audrey. Mel Wells, who's Gravis Mushnick. Who's the owner of the plant shop. We have Dick Miller, who has been in 1,000 things. He was in Gremlins 1 and 2. Actually, a bunch of these characters were in Gremlins. He was also in The Howling. And Piranha. Lots of Joe Dante flicks.
Yes.
Myrtle Vale as a Winifred Crowboyne. who plays Seymour's mother, of course. There's a lot of other additional characters here. One I do want to mention, of course, is the great Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson's debut role.
Very small role, though. But it's got lines, and it's quite of a quirky role.
The one that you watched, because you can watch, I mean, this was originally in black and white, but they have colorized
it. They colorized it.
Which is kind of funny, because the version that I watched was colorized.
Same.
But it would occasionally dip back into the black and white. It wasn't colorized very well.
It wasn't done very well, but they tried.
But it is kind of funny, because, like, he would be talking, and... Like, Seymour would be talking, but then his nose would be gray.
Yeah.
Because, like, that cracked me up.
Yeah.
That it just wasn't very well done, but it was still good.
Yeah.
So I think we can just get right into this. This one is short and sweet and pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I actually fought with myself for a few weeks on this. I'm like, I really wanted to do the musical.
Yeah.
Just because I love it. But it is by far not a B movie.
Well,
like,
I want to do a sidebar real quick, because
we've
had this conversation before, where sometimes here at, like, I understand that our name is Baking to the B Movies. Mm-hmm. That was the name that we were like, oh, when we were developing this podcast, we were like, okay, we're going to watch B horror movies and we're going to make recipes inspired by those B horror movies.
Yeah.
And then as we started progressing, we were incorporating and including more just, like, either bad horror movies that we, like, loved to hate watch.
Yeah.
Or horror movies that were just good, but they were expensive. So at this point, it's just Baking to Horror Movies. Like, I think the name is still catchy.
Keep the name.
We're not changing the name. Baking to Horror Movies doesn't
like
have the same...
Baking to the genre.
Yeah, Baking to Horror Movies or Baking to Scary Movies doesn't have the same kick as Baking to the B Movies. I think that title is fantastic. I'm very proud that we came up with that. That is our baby, and I'm not going to change its name now. We're seven mm-hmm. seasons in.
Yeah.
But at this point, like, I think it's okay that we can review things that might have a higher budget or might... Because... If they're worth talking about, if we can make good food inspired by them, that's fine.
Right. I don't disagree, but I feel like there has to be a line.
Oh, yeah, no.
Like, not, like, the budget for the 1986 version of this, the musical, wasn't inflated, I don't believe.
Yeah.
But there are other movies out there where the budget is super inflated.
Well, if, like, we were doing, like, Waterworld.
Isn't that
the most, like, expensive movie ever made was, like, Waterworld or something?
Maybe at the time. I'm not sure now.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, if you were,
I'd like to kind of keep it low. To have, just basically have, like, a roof.
Of course.
You know?
Of course. But, like, yeah, if you were like, oh, we're gonna, like, we're gonna bake something to Waterworld, I'd be like, that budget's out of control. We can't do that. Or, like, if I came to you and was like, hey, let's do Oppenheimer, you'd be like, no.
Absolutely not.
Although that is
also
a great movie.
I like to do, like, more of the genre, less mainstream type stuff anyway, yes. Which I think we need to keep to.
Yeah.
But this movie I picked, I've been wanting to do this one for a while now because this is the very earliest memory I have of watching a scary flick. Not this movie, the musical.
Yeah.
And it's not even scary. It's not even scary.
It's not even scary,
I don't know how old I was. I must have been like, I don't know, 7 or 8. I have no idea. I was watching it with my mom.
Yeah.
And my mom loves that movie, and I'm watching it, and, like, I didn't watch it from the beginning, but it's the part where the plant, like, eats Mushnik whole.
Oh, Jesus.
And it freaked me out so bad, and my mom's just laughing. She's like, ooh, Steffi. She's like, you see that? And I'm like, ah!
I love your mom. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It was so funny.
I haven't seen your mom in so long.
The same. Actually, I'm supposed to see her next weekend.
Oh, nice.
But anyways, it was my very first, earliest experience from that. And since then, I've been obsessed with plants. I mean, I'm really into plants. I talk about it all the time.
Well,
and
say,
carnivorous plants, too.
It's true. And
like, I have a bunch of carnivorous plants that I attempt to propagate.
Are you as obsessed as Jackie is with her? I was going to say Jackie. Our friend Jackie takes plant loving to like a whole...
Yeah, she's insane.
Extraordinary level that I've never seen before in a human being.
And she could grow anything out of
anything.
It's true. I don't even understand how that works. But anyway.
If I have a dying plant, I'm just going to give it to her and be like, yeah. Nurse it back to health, please.
She can.
Yeah, it's 100%. Crazy.
Like, I don't know what the heck she does. I think feel like she sold her soul to the devil for her ability to grow plants. But I have a fair amount of plants around.
Yeah.
I mean, primarily the plants I like to do is, you know, provide a service where they give me food.
Yeah.
But even then, like, I like plants. Like, I've just become obsessed with them. And especially the carnivorous ones. Big fan of those. But anyways, little sidebar, you know, on this movie. But I couldn't, in good conscience, do the musical because the budget was too big for me.
Yeah. But every once in a while, we like to throw more, like, Scream. The budget on that was a lot.
Mm.
Texas Chainsaw 3D, I remember was one that we did. Because it was so bad, but the budget was... Pretty big, but it was, like, fun to hate watch because it was stupid.
Stupid Resident Evil. Stupid Wolf. I think the budget on that one is the biggest one that we've ever done.
Wolf?
Yeah.
Because it all went to Jack
Nicholson.
Because
90% of it paid for Jack Nicholson.
Which, do you think that this movie is his redemption from that? Because we did Wolf and it was terrible. Do you think that this is his way of...
Well, this came out many, like...
This came out much...
30 years before Wolf did.
Right, but do you think, like, in terms of this podcast, that this would redeem Jack Nicholson in our eyes? Because Wolf was so bad that it just kind of put us off of him completely, of how terrible it was. But then...
Well, here's another thing about that, though. He's made way more good movies than he has bad.
It's true.
So I can't really... Put it off that, like, the problem with that movie being bad had nothing to do with him or the actors in it.
I'll tell you, have you ever seen...
It had everything to do with the poor writing and the poor direction.
Have you ever seen the interview, it's like, this was years ago after the Oscars, or Jennifer Lawrence had, like, won her first Oscar or something, and she's doing an interview, and Jack Nicholson, who at that time was, like, in his 80s, like, comes up behind her.
Was he in his 80s then? I think he's in his 80s now.
Okay, so he's in his 70s
then. 70s or something,
But he, like, she turns around and, like, does a double take, because it's Jack fucking Nicholson. And she's like, hi. And he's like, he goes, you look like an old girlfriend. And she's like, oh, do I look like a new girlfriend? And he's like, maybe. And she's like,
you still got it.
It's so fucking funny. So I think we could get right into this. And right off the bat, I do just want to say that, you know, it is insane to see a movie that stars Jack Nicholson or Jack Nicholson is in that he's not. Like
the main guy,
he was like in the last line of the credits, which is crazy. Yeah. I was like, Jesus, like that's a everybody starts somewhere, and Jack Nicholson started here.
Yep,
reach for those stars, guys. You never know.
Yeah, but the first movie John Travolta was ever in got him into Scientology. So
wait, was that Staying Alive?
No, it was before that.
Saturday Night Fever?
No, it wasn't any of those. I can't remember the name of it. I'll have to look it up afterwards.
God, I remember Staying Alive would be on VH1 at, like, any given time.
I remember you giving me the stupid DVD to Staying Alive.
I did.
And I don't know why that's still in my DVD collection right now. I need to huck it into the woods.
Because it's...
I did watch it, though. I think we watched it together.
Isn't it so bad that it's great?
It's so bad that it's bad.
Christians are staying alive one of these times.
Maybe.
As a one-off.
Maybe. At least it's not like the Christmas movie we did.
Well, it's funny because I enjoy our little one-offs that we do that make no sense and have no rhyme or reason. And I feel like if we did like an entire season of horror movies and then just are staying alive at the end, just throw everybody off their tracks.
Right.
So good.
Maybe. All right. So back to the gloriousness that is the Little Shop of Horrors.
In Skid Row in California. Yes. I'm assuming Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Because they do reference Hollywood a lot.
They reference Hollywood or the Hollywood Hills or something. So yeah. L.A.-esque.
Yes.
Adjacent.
So we are, what is the name of Mushnick's Flower Shop? Is it Mushnick's Florals or is it called something else?
I think it's just Mushnick's Flower Shop or Mushnick's Flowers, something to that extent.
This movie takes place predominantly within Mushnick's Floral Shop.
Yep.
And he is a down on his luck florist.
Yep.
Business is not good because of the location of the shop. And because of his clientele, which are just the most...
vagrant.
Like, I was going to say, they're, like, the most, like, deviant, like, vagrants. Like, there's one...
The location is not great.
Right. Well, there's one woman that comes in literally every day to buy flowers because somebody in her life has died. There's been some horrific tragedy, like, every day. And it's never, like, it's never, like, a direct relative or... No. It's like, oh, my brother's lawn keeper's, like, friend's son passed away. Can you believe it? I need carnations. And then, like, oh, my neighbor's dog's walker's aunt passed away. I need more carnations. This is, like, every day she's always, like, weeping about it, which is really funny.
And let's not forget the customer who goes in there because he eats flowers.
He eats them. He puts salt and pepper on them.
He puts salt and pepper on these flowers and eats them.
Yeah. It's the most ragtag group of just...
Ugh, Motley Crue.
Yeah, it really is. But Mushnick, so business is not doing well. He's stressed out. Now, what is his, it's his daughter, right?
Who, Audrey?
Audrey. That's his daughter?
I don't think so.
Oh.
He was just, I hope I don't get any of the information mixed up with the 1986 version. I believe she was just an employee.
Okay.
Maybe it was his daughter. I don't know, because they would go out to eat and stuff.
Yeah.
It could have been his daughter. I don't actually know.
Okay.
But she does work at the flower shop with Seymour.
Yes. So Audrey's, like, very kind and very friendly.
Sweet.
Little dim-witted, but, like, very kind, very sweet. And then you have Seymour, who is just ghost face from Scream in terms of, like, clumsiness. He's just the clumsiest person.
He's a nice guy.
He's super nice.
He's super sweet.
Well-intentioned.
Yeah, he's well-intentioned, but he is just a clumsy goofball.
Yes, tripping over everything, dropping things.
Charming, clumsy goofball. He is charming.
This dentist calls throughout this chaos.
Dr. Farb,
this dentist in the area, calls and places an order for flowers for his office. And Seymour goes to, like, trim them down to deliver them. And he cuts them too short.
Mm-hmm. He screws it up.
And Mushnick is just, like, at the end of his rope. Because none of these people are coming in here and spending any good money. The woman that keeps coming in because everybody in her life is dying around her, like, wants flowers for free. This other dude's just straight up eating them in the shop. Like, it's just, it's this most...
It's chaos.
And it makes me miss, like...
And they're not making any money.
No, of course
not. Like, they make no money.
They spend more money than they make.
Yeah.
And I was, like, watching this whole, like, interaction with all these people in the flower shop, and, like, I miss that kind of, like, wholesome...
Right?
Like, slapstick, silly comedy. You don't really see that much anymore.
You don't.
Like, I'm trying...
I think that's one of the downsides to technology.
Yeah.
You know, and things changing, is that you don't have the charming, like, stores like that. Because people don't go to stores anymore, you know?
But even just, like, the interactions. Like, I can't... This movie reminded me a lot of The Great Race with... I think it's Jack Lemmon and Natalie mm-hmm. Wood and Tony Curtis, and they're trying, they're racing around the world, I think. Like, it's like this, whoever can get to whatever spot wins, like, a fucking cash prize or something. And it's like...
$1 million.
It's total...
$1 million cash prize.
It's total, like, slapstick comedy. Like, Tony Curtis is very funny in it. Natalie Wood, of course, is great in it. But there's, like, this big pie fight scene that's, like, famous because I forget how many pies. It was, like, real pies. They went through, like, fucking 80,000 pies or something in this one take. And it's so... It shouldn't be funny because it's, like, the premise of it is, like, it's a pie fight. Like, that's not...
I mean, it's fine.
It's fine. But it's so funny to watch because it's so silly and, like, pure-hearted, as stupid as it sounds. It's, like, very wholesome. And a lot of the comedy in this is, like, wholesome comedy, which I don't really see much of anymore, so I kind of miss that. You really get it in older movies than you do now.
And yeah, definitely.
I miss that. So Seymour, like, so Mushnick is at the end of his rope. Seymour's a fucking klutz. Audrey is just, she's a space cadet.
A little bit.
And his shop is just filled with people that aren't buying anything. And
no, it's crazy because the shop has a bunch of people in it, but they don't buy anything. They just hanging out at the old flower shop.
Yep, that's all
getting drunk at the old flower shop. But anyways, so Seymour tries to put this flower arrangement together, completely botches it, apparently. And Mushnick fires him.
Yeah.
Like, right there on the spot.
And Seymour saying, like, you can't fire me because I'm growing something that's going to change the whole shop.
Yeah.
Like, if I can get this thing to grow, it's going to change everything. And we're going to be making so much money because everybody's going to want this thing.
Yeah, everybody's going to want to see it, too.
And Mushnick's like, all right, bring me this amazing flower. Yeah. And if it's something truly extraordinary, I'll keep you on. And we'll see what we can do. But if it doesn't meet the criteria, like, you're out of here. And I think he mentions that Seymour's salary is $10 a week.
He does. It's 10 bucks a week. Keep in mind, 60s. But 10 bucks a week.
Yeah.
So 40 bucks a month. He does live with his mom.
And we meet her when he goes home to get the plant.
She's such a trip.
Yeah. So Seymour lives in a really cool house. Like, the his house is super cool.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Psycho house.
Oh, yeah.
You know? It's not the same, but it's similar.
But Seymour's mother is she an alcoholic?
Quite possibly.
I think she might be. But she has every ailment known to man. Like, she's always sick. Like, there's always something wrong with her. And she gets,
like, that weird, like, Dr. Blank and Blank's
tonic.
Magic
tonic or whatever. And I do like that she's bedridden, even though she doesn't need to be bedridden. She's in bed. And Seymour's, like, getting his plant.
It's because I think it has something to do with the fact that, you know, it's kind of like a reverse Munchausen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where she can't have Seymour go anywhere because she wants to keep him there.
Yes.
Which kind of, they explain, not really explain, but it kind of fills out the situation when he starts to, you know, want to date Audrey.
Yes. But I like when he hands her the tonic that he brought home for her, because he comes to get his plant.
Yeah.
And it's not doing too good.
No.
It's dying. And even the mother is like, it didn't look like that this morning. And he's just like, oh, well, you know, I'll see what I can do. But he gives her the tonic and she's looking at it and she's like, you know, 98 proof alcohol. And then, like, chugs the whole fucking thing. And she's like, I feel better already.
Right.
So Seymour brings this plant back to the shop and it looks like, it looks like a Venus flytrap.
A large Venus flytrap.
And it's clearly, like, dying.
Yeah.
And he's like, it didn't look like this morning. It looked fine this morning when I left. And Mushnick is not impressed. But Seymour convinces him. He's like, let me fix it. I'll nurse it back to health, and then you can make a decision.
Mushnick gives him 2 weeks.
Yes. And so Seymour...
Or a week.
I think it's a week. I think he basically says, like...
Again, I'm getting it mixed up.
He's like, you know, if you can bring that plant back to life and it's, like, as impressive as you say it is, like, you and it can stay.
Yep.
If not, like, you and it are out. Like, you're out of here.
Yep.
And so Seymour decides to... he decides to just stay up all night.
To try to nurse this plant back to health.
And he's just kind of sitting there looking at it and... I think he mentioned something like, you know, it becomes, like, active when the sun goes down. It, like, moves and stuff and, like, gets a little bit more lively. And sure enough, when the sun goes down, the plant opens up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, didn't say anything, but it just opens up. And Seymour's talking to it and being like, you know, what do you need? And I think he reaches over to get something and he, like, pricks his finger.
Yeah, he pricks his finger on, like, a rose, like a thorn
rose, yeah,
or
like
something.
A rose plant or something.
Yeah.
And his fingers are bleeding. And he gets blood inside this Venus flytrap.
Mm-hmm.
And it immediately, like, starts opening and closing. Like, it's lively. And Seymour picks up on, like, oh, it eats blood?
It eats human blood. Which,
time to put it in the trash.
Which is a red flag. If yeah. I'm like, oh, look, I propagated this plant. It's a, you know, I crossbred this seed with this seed and got this. I call it this, but it eats on blood.
Yeah.
Specifically human blood. I would not keep that plant. Or maybe I'd put it in formaldehyde to preserve it.
Yeah. So, like the great white shark.
Yeah.
So Seymour decides to like prick open all his fingers, which seems unnecessary, to feed this thing.
A lot of blood.
Yeah, to feed this thing blood. And the next day, like the thing eats the blood apparently, but the next day when Mushnick comes in, it's much bigger.
It grows quite rapidly and looks very, very healthy.
Yes. And I think at this point, like, people start taking notice.
Yes, people do.
And, you know, so Mushnick realizing this thing is, like, it could be a moneymaker. Seymour was able to essentially nurse it back to health. He starts treating him, like, very nicely. Like, he's like...
Yeah, he starts asking him to call him, like...
Dad.
Dad, and he'll call him son.
And he gives him a raise. He gives him a $2 raise. And Audrey's who's like
$48.
Yeah. Audrey's just like so supportive of all of this. Like she's, you know.
Yeah, she's all for it.
I think that's when they get that, like he names it Audrey Jr.
Yep.
After her. And she's all excited despite the fact that this thing is like a literal, like, it looks like a monster. It looks like a legit monster.
It's a legit monster.
So. Again, so, like, and it starts to gain, like, notoriety. Like, people are coming to the shop to see this.
Yeah, it's becoming, like, a...
An attraction.
An attraction. And people are going there to see it, but while they're there, they're buying stuff.
Which is, yeah.
So, awesome. Which was the whole intent that
right.
they had, or Seymour
so,
had.
So, like, there's a couple of, like, high school girls that come in to see this, to see the plant. And they mention that they have, like, $2,000 to spend on flowers alone because they're having some parade and they need to decorate a float.
Yeah.
And they decide that they're going to, like, get the flowers from Mushnick. So he's just, like, he's beside himself. Like,
yeah.
This is working out in his favor. But, like, that night, Seymour is up with the plant again and the sun goes down and it opens back up. And this time it's talking.
Yeah.
And it is. It's just saying, you know, feed me. Feed me more. It's me at Taco Bell. It's
yeah, it's basically.
It's me when I want my Crunchwrap Supreme. It's feed me more. And isn't it like Seymour doesn't, he's like, I don't have any more blood to give you. Like, I'm not,
I have no more fingers.
He's like, I'm not gonna, so.
What am I do? Like, who can slice my wrist?
So I think he cuts his hand a little bit more, but the thing's still like, feed me, I'm hungry,
It wants more.
And I know that Seymour like leaves in frustration.
He does. He leaves in frustration. He goes for a walk.
Yeah.
And he's near like railroad tracks, I believe.
Yeah.
And he's just, you know, beside himself because he doesn't really know what to do. He can't continue to bleed himself dry to feed this plant.
Yeah.
So he hucks a rock.
It's not even just like a stone. He like picks up like a fucking boulder.
Well, it's not that big, but it was a big rock.
The thing is so comically huge. And I'm just, you know, it's like that's what you throw when you're trying to hit a rat or something.
Yeah, I suppose. But he picks up this boulder apparently and coincidentally knocks out, I would have to say a drunkard.
Yes.
You know, some rando.
Isn't he, like, aiming for, like, an empty bottle that's balancing
yeah,
on some...
he wasn't aiming for a person.
Yeah, he's just trying to, like, knock this bottle off a thing while he was, like, in his deep thought.
Yeah, and he misses.
And he hits this drunkard.
Hits this drunk, who is currently drunk at the time, we assume.
Yes.
I believe he does have an empty bottle on hand.
Yes.
Knocks him out and knocks this drunk onto, like, the train track.
Yeah.
And coincidentally, here comes the train.
Yeah.
So, watching this... That dude had plenty of time to get the hell up.
Yeah.
Or even for Seymour to come and get him off that track.
Yeah, there was ample opportunity.
There was ample opportunity. But he didn't, obviously.
So now this guy is hacked up to bits because he just got hit by a train.
Mm-hmm.
So Seymour does what anybody in the situation would do. Not call the police. Put the body parts in a burlap sack. And then go back to your shop and...
He doesn't do that, actually. Well, he does do that. But prior to that, he actually just tries to dispose of the body.
Yes.
He puts it in a sack, and he's trying to put the sack in, like, a garbage can. But every time he does, somebody walks by.
Right.
And then he goes to another garbage can and does the same thing. Which I actually thought was super clever because the indication of people walking by was just shadows behind him, you know? And then he's just like, well, what the hell? Like, how am I going to dispose of this body I indirectly killed? Right. Murdered brutally. He brings it back to the shop at that point.
And he has the burlap sack next to the plant. The plant's like, feed me, feed me. And, you know, Seymour's like, okay, well, like, you know, I might as well. I got all these body parts.
It's a great way to dispose of a body.
Well, Mushnick happens to be heading back to the shop because him and Audrey were having dinner.
Yes.
And he had forgotten his wallet in his other coat.
Yep.
And the waitress, who apparently has heard this line from him before, basically gives him the ultimatum, you go get the money and she stays, and then you make sure that you pay.
Yeah.
So he leaves Audrey there to eat, and he goes back to the shop to get his other coat that has his wallet in it.
Yep.
And as he's, like, going to the shop, he sees Seymour feeding body parts
to a plant.
Into the plant, and the plant eating them. And he just, like, he goes back to the restaurant, does not get his wallet, but he gives the waitress his watch and just orders, like, all the alcohol because he needs to drink.
Yeah. He literally orders all of the alcohol.
All of it.
Yeah, because what he just saw is a tad on the disturbing side.
Yes. The next day, Mushnick is going...
He doesn't call the... It also is point... I want to make a note that he does not call the police.
He does not.
He does think about it, though.
Yes.
And he waits till the next day.
The next day, Mushnick goes to confront Seymour, who arrives at the shop with a toothache. And Seymour's in no condition to have a conversation. His tooth hurts.
Mm-hmm.
But Mushnick is furious because he wants Seymour and this fucking plant out. He wants them out.
Yeah, because clearly there are body parts there and there's, you know, something foul at play here. He doesn't really know what the situation is.
Yes.
Like, he doesn't know whose body parts those were.
Right.
Or how or what happened to it, you know?
Right. So he instructs Seymour to go to the dentist, get his tooth checked out, and then come back so that they can finish their conversation because he has questions. Seymour goes to the dentist. Now, this is the dentist who ordered the plants that Seymour ultimately fucked up, like, the day before.
Yup.
So the dentist is, like, bullshit with Seymour.
Yeah, he's super pissed. Because, you know, that's a reason to be pissed at somebody.
Yeah. And, but, like, this was, like, dentistry in a nutshell. It's just, like, the dude's, like, straight up getting revenge.
Also what made me terrified of dentists.
Yes. My dentist is amazing, though. She's great.
That's good.
I saw her a few weeks ago for, like, my routine cleaning.
Yeah.
And she numbs me up ahead of time because I'm so sensitive.
Yeah.
And she doesn't, like, it took me years to find a dentist that, like, I'm comfortable with and that I actually don't mind. Because I've had some brutal ones in the past. Like, awful. Like, women who just should not be dentists. Or moms or nurses. Or, like, just anyone that has access to children and vulnerable people.
Yeah.
But my dentist is amazing because I tend to, like, squeak when they're, like, cleaning. Like, the noise gets to me. So if I hear, like, metal on metal or, like, metal on the tooth, I'm like,
yeah.
And she rolls with it. Like, she'll do it back to me. So, like, the last time she was doing my cleaning, she, like, numbed me up. Not, like, an injection, but, like, Orajel.
Yeah.
So I can, like, go back to work. And she's, like, she's doing the cleaning, and I hear, like, the scraping noise. And I'm like, meh. And she goes, meh, back at me. And then, like, she's doing more, and I was like, and she's like, ah! Like, so she does that for, like,
fun bedside manner.
Yeah, she's fun.
That's good.
And I know all about her kids and everything. Like, she's super sweet. She tells me all about her kids, like, while she's cleaning my teeth, because all I can do is listen. Not that I particularly mind, but I'm just like,
What else are you gonna do?
But this dentist exacts revenge on his patients.
Yeah, he's a real dick.
For, like, not paying their bill. Like, he'll rip their tooth out, or, like, in Seymour's case, he's gonna rip a tooth out. And he's just, like, torturing people. And Seymour doesn't want to see him. Like, he freaks out. And the guy is like, oh, I'm not even going to use Novocaine. That's how easy it's going to be. Which sounds like the guy who did my fucking wisdom teeth.
right.
But
I was going to ask you about that. Like, did this trigger anything?
it just reminded me of my oral surgeon saying, like, okay, we're not going to knock you out. And I was like, wait, what?
And I would have gotten up right then and there.
And he was like, it's shallow enough where we can rip the wisdom tooth out. Well, so, okay, sidebar. I think I've mentioned this a while back. I had my wisdom tooth taken out last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned completely sideways. And it was putting pressure on one of my back molars. And the space in between the wisdom tooth and the molar had gotten infected. So I had to have all this crazy dental work done.
Right.
And the last step was getting the wisdom tooth out. They got rid of the infection because, you know, they're not going to go in there when everything's infected. They got rid of the infection. They cleaned everything up. Everything was fine. Like, I was on antibiotics and everything. And then they had to get the tooth out. And my surgeon was like, it's so shallow and it's sideways that I can just go in and pop it right out and it's going to be fine. And I was like, okay. And he's like, my record, I forget what he said. He's like, my record for a wisdom tooth extraction is like 8 minutes, but I think I can do it in under that. And I was like, well, we don't need to try. Like, we don't need to break that record. I would appreciate it more if you just took your time.
Yeah.
So he had two nurses, one to do the suction and one to restrain me because the noise and the pressure on my jaw was going to make me flip out. And he knew it. And as soon as he went in there, I was fighting. Like, I was fighting for my life. And the noise was horrific. He ripped it out. And was like, oh, you don't even need stitches. And I was like, okay. And he's like, 4 minutes, new record. And he high-fived me and then left the room. And I was like, what the fuck just happened? Like, what just happened to me? It was so traumatic.
Yeah.
I went to my mom's after just because, like, I couldn't drive back to my apartment. It was too far. And I went to my mom's and I came through the door and I had, like, the gauze in my mouth. And she's like, how are you? And I was like, ah! I started crying, like, immediately. Fucking horrific. So this gave me vibes. This gave me like the flashbacks. But anyway, he gets Seymour in his chair, and I don't even know how this happens. They have like a duel with like the fucking the scalpels or whatever.
Like, yeah, like Seymour gets up from the chair, then pushes him. I don't know, but
he kills the dentist. He
somehow kills the dentist.
And so. While he's like,
and let's be clear that Seymour is fazed by this.
Yes,
like he is very upset that he killed a man.
Two men now.
Technically, the train killed the other one, but he did have something to do with it. But this specifically was a little bit different. But yeah, he's fazed by this. So at least it's not one of those situations.
Yeah.
But anyways.
So he...
What's he do?
So he's, you know, he's got a couple options here, but one of them is get that dentist out of there and give it to the plant who's hungry. But while he's in the dentist's office, who should come through the door because they want their teeth cleaned and potentially ripped out because they have, like, a thing with pain.
They have a pain fetish.
They have a pain fetish. But fucking Jack Nicholson.
Friggin' Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson, yep. Who is just as creepy in this as he is in everything else that he's ever been in.
Yep.
And
he doesn't know,
like, what the dentist looks like.
Yeah. So, like, Seymour hides poses as the dentist.
He puts Farb in the dentist chair. Like, he puts him in the chair like he's a patient and pretends that he's been, like, knocked out so he can have a tooth ripped out. And he poses as Dr. Farb.
Yeah.
And he's talking to Jack Nicholson's character, who's like, yes, please, like, if you need to rip out my teeth, feel free to do so. I have so many cavities. Like, he's obsessed with pain.
Yeah, he loves it.
And he's, like, really into it. And so Seymour hides Dr. Farb and then lets Jack Nicholson in the chair. And it's, like, it's so funny. It's just funny seeing Jack Nicholson do it. But Seymour, like, poses as this dentist and, like, does all this dental work on Jack Nicholson's character, who's, like, really into it, like, loves it, doesn't even need Novocaine. Like, that's how much he's into it. But at the end of the visit, like, you know, he's like, well, you know, thank you. You have a great day. And Jack Nicholson's like, yes, I will recommend you to all of my friends. And he turns around and his teeth are, like, fucking jagged and, like, sharp and dead. It's so funny. It's really – and that's, like – it's like a 30-second blip of Jack Nicholson, and it's so fucking funny.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff. Okay, so, meanwhile, we get a shot of a couple of detectives.
Yes.
Who have noticed we have a couple of dudes missing at this point.
The dentist, and I think, was it like an undercover cop was posing as like the alcoholic down by the train? Was it like another cop that they were looking for?
I don't know if it was another cop. Maybe. But two guys are missing. So anyways, yeah, so... So, to finish up the bit about Dr. Farb, obviously, Seymour takes the body and feeds it to the plant.
Yes.
And then we have a shot of the two doctors, detectives, and now they're starting to do an investigation. So they start showing up at, like, Mushnick's and this and that, basically, to get, you know...
More info
on stuff and where these guys have been. Meanwhile, so Audrey Jr., has some buds.
Yes. Audrey Jr. is huge and has buds growing. And it's during this time that, you know, Seymour comes through the door and regular Audrey, not the plant,
yeah.
regular Audrey's just so happy to see him and she's so proud of him that she just plants one on him.
Yep.
And they realize that, like, oh, they actually like each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asks her out on a date.
Yep.
And invites her to his mother's house to have dinner.
Yep.
And she's all for it because they like each other.
Yeah.
They have for a while.
Yeah.
It's cute.
While that's happening, we have a representative from the Society of Silent Flower Observers.
Yes.
Of Southern California. Does the society exist? Why isn't there a secret society for me to be in?
We should make one.
We should. Great.
It should be noted that Mushnick now realizes that in order for this plant to get bigger and stay thriving, it needs to be fed human blood. And Seymour yeah. keeps assuring him that, like, no, he's fully grown. He won't need any more. He's fully grown.
Yeah.
But we know that's not the case.
Obviously.
So Mushnick is going to stay at the shop and watch the plant.
To watch the plant,
to make sure nobody else gets eaten. Meanwhile, Seymour and Audrey have their date at his mother's house, which I love that the mother came to the door and she's like, oh, I'm a complete sea hag. And, like, and she's making, like, weird ass food.
Like the strangest things. It's almost like to turn her off, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's like, it was a bowl of soup.
Yeah.
But it was actually a bowl of cod liver oil.
Yeah.
Because Audrey's just like, it's a little oily.
Yeah.
And there was something else. I can't remember exactly what, but it was so goofy. And it's definitely not something that you would normally eat.
Yes. At the shop, Mushnick is sitting up watching the plant and it opens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, feed me.
Mm-hmm.
And Mushnick's like, no. Like, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
And he's like, there's nothing to feed you with. And the plant's got jokes. The plant's like.
The plant has jokes.
The plant's like, you look big enough for me to eat. Mm-hmm. Like, plant has a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And even Mushnick calls him out on it. And he's mm-hmm. like, oh, the plant's like, you know, being sassy or whatever.
Right.
But while he's in the shop, somebody breaks in that was there earlier that day
yes.
and had seen how many people were coming and going.
Yes. He's assuming that they have a whole bunch of cash lying around because the shop is very successful at this point.
Yes. And Mushnick, you know, is telling, Mushnick lets the guy clear out the register and there's only like $30 in there.
Yeah.
And the guy wants more money and he's threatening to shoot Mushnick. He's got a revolver mm-hmm. or whatever.
And Mushnick is saying that there is no more.
He's like, there's no
more
money.
And he's like, I was here earlier. There were tons of people here. There's definitely more.
Yeah. And Mushnick, fast thinking, is like, it's in the plant. We keep it in the bottom. We keep the money in the bottom of the plant. And the guy's like, that plant? Like, the big open plant. And he's like, yeah, the money's at the bottom of the plant. You gotta, like, really get in there. And the fucking guy does, because why not?
That's an idiot.
The guy totally does.
Surely.
Yeah.
Surely that's not a mouth.
Guy totally, totally falls for it, gets into the plant, and the plant, like, eats him, obviously.
Mm-hmm. In one fell swoop.
Very quickly. So, I don't know if it's, like, the next day or a couple days later, Seymour and Audrey decide to have, like, a picnic at the shop, which seems like, Seymour knows that this plant eats people, and they're gonna have a romantic date at the shop, knowing fully well that this plant is gonna open up and want human blood. Like, Audrey doesn't know it's a fucking people-eating plant. Like, you know? But Seymour, so they have, like, this little picnic at the shop, and something that made me laugh so hard is, like, so they're at the shop, and they're...
It's at night, too, I believe.
Yes.
So the shop is closed. There's no customers.
Yeah, so they're sitting there, like, eating food, and they go to kiss, and you get the, like, feed me in the background. She's like, what did you say? Because Audrey's fucking dumb as a box of rocks. And Seymour's like, oh, I didn't mean it. That's, like, his quote's like, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean to do it. I didn't mean it.
Yeah, he's just playing off like, yeah, that was me.
Yeah. And they go to kiss again. It's, oh, I'm hungry. And rather than just, like, look in the general direction of where this fucking voice is coming from, which is clearly the fucking gigantic plant in front of you.
Obviously, right.
She gets mad at Seymour.
She does. Saying, she, like, thinks he's, like, mocking her or playing jokes or something.
Yeah.
Not quite sure where she got that from, but it's obviously not him talking. Yeah.
So she storms out and he goes after her and try and stop her. And he's telling her, because at this point, you know, the plant has gained so much notoriety that the woman leading the secret society notices that the bulbs haven't opened, and Seymour has told her earlier in the day they should open probably within the next couple days, I would imagine. And she's like, great, we'll do like a big ceremony, you'll get a trophy.
Yeah, they're going to give him a trophy and all this other stuff for growing this plant.
Yeah, and then they have these two high school girls that are getting ready to throw this like rose parade, and they want to put Audrey Jr., the plant, in the fucking float and have the queen sit in her. Like, that's the whole plan. Just, like, chaos. Just fucking chaos.
Yeah.
So he's trying to tell Audrey, like, you know, there's so much happening. Let me just get this trophy and then I will explain it. And she's like, explain it now, Seymour. And he's like, no, I can't, like, you don't understand. Like, and she's like, you know, he's like, I just, you know, we can talk when everything's done. And she's like, you know, she's just being a fickle dummy. And so funny. So anyway, Seymour's pissed because the plant has now, like, ruined his life or something. I don't know.
Well, it's in the process of basically ruining his relationship and then also his life. So she leaves.
Yes.
And he's still there. And the plant is still talking.
Plant's hungry.
The plant's hungry. And the plant kind of hypnotizes him.
Yeah. Like, Seymour goes over to, like, confront it. And he's like, listen here, I'm
like,
not going to...
Right. Like, I'm not going to put up with your crap kind of deal.
Yeah. And the plant's just like, yeah, no. And it's just like... puts him in a trance.
And then it puts him in a trance. So then he leaves.
He leaves to go find
food.
Food for his master. That's
he started calling it master.
Started calling the plant master. So of course Seymour ends up in like the red light district of Los Angeles.
Skid Row.
Where all the ladies of the night are throwing their scarves to see if he'll pick them up and show interest. And he doesn't because he's in a trance.
Right.
There's,
I actually thought this part was kind of funny.
there's this one prostitute who is like particularly aggressive with him. Like, she
very
really
aggressive.
Yeah, like she really wants his attention and his money. But he's telling her, like, you're too bony.
Yeah, like you're too like he's poking her.
He's poking. He's like you're too bony. Like, my master
doesn't. Master won't like you.
Yeah. And she's like, you know, I'm not too bony. Like, and he's like, no, you're too bony. And then
Master needs fat and meat.
Yeah. And so ultimately, like, they decide, like, he decides, like, well, whatever, because he's like, wait, so you want to go back? Like, he thinks, like, she means, like, yeah, I'll get eaten by the fucking plant. So she's like, yeah, like, your place or mine? And he's like, I don't know. And she's like, well, flip on it. And he's like, I don't have a coin. So she's like, well, find something to flip. So again, he picks up another comically big rock and, like, spits on it. And he's like, all right, wet side, we go to your place. Dry side, we go to mine. He, like, hucks it up in the air, and it falls down and hits her in the head. And, like, because, and kills her. Fucking kills her immediately.
Right, or at least knocks her out.
But
anyways, he throws her on his shoulder and walks her back to the shop.
And feeds her to the plant. And
leans her to the plant.
So... I think it's, like, the next day is, like, the trophy ceremony.
Mm-hmm. And the detectives, Fink and Stooley,
yes,
go to this whole ceremony, too, because they just, they're basically at wit's end where these people are disappearing and they have no clues.
Yeah.
Complete lack of evidence.
And this is where, like, everybody's congregating, so maybe they can get some answers as to where these missing people are going.
So they go, along with the Society of Secret Flower, whatever.
And
everybody else in town.
Yeah. And they're there, and Seymour is begging Audrey to, like, talk to him, but she won't because, again, fickle and dumb.
Mm.
And Mushnick is just like, he's just like, you know, whatever at this point. Like, he you know, it's almost over. And then when it's all said and done, they're getting rid of the plant. That's his plan. And while everybody's there, including the high school girls, because this part made me laugh so hard, is the bulbs start opening up.
Yes.
And when the bulbs open up, they reveal these big flowers, but inside the flowers are the faces of the people that the plant has eaten.
Yeah.
So you have the dentist, you have the guy at the railroad tracks,
you have the prostitute. The robber.
Mm-hmm. And the woman at the secret society woman, like, has a complete meltdown and faints. The cops are like, they realize that, like, Seymour has done this because this is his plant.
Mm-hmm.
And they give pursuit. Like, he runs out of the shop.
Yeah, he takes off.
He takes off, and the cops and Mushnick go after him.
Yeah.
But the high school girls are like, oh my God, these are so beautiful. This is going to look so good on the float. Unfazed, completely unbothered. Like, so fucking good. So funny. So we get this, like, whole pursuit scene.
Mm-hmm.
And they go through, like, a rubber, like a rubber yard where there's like tires and they produce like a rubber.
Like Vulcanvania.
Yeah.
Remember yeah. Vulcanvania? And, with the judge.
And they're like climbing all over the tires. They're like, dipping and diving out of buildings. It's like this whole pursuit. And ultimately.
Yeah, they ended up in like a junkyard or something.
Yeah. And ultimately, like Seymour like hides in the junkyard and Mushnick convinces the cops to just like let it go. Not let it go, but like, we're not going to find him in here. It's dark. Let's just leave. Like, let's just go. And they leave. And Seymour, I think ultimately he heads back to the shop.
Yes, where it's empty now.
Yes, everybody has left. The commotion has died down. He's the only one there. And what is it that he does to, like, he does something with the plant. Oh, he's going to go hack up the plant.
Yeah, he basically blames it for ruining his life. Legit. The plant, of course, asks to be fed again.
Yeah, it's hungry.
Feed me, Seymour. Seymour grabs a knife and, climbs into its maw. Which was probably the wrong call, let's be honest.
Very dumb.
With the intention of killing it, of course.
Yes.
I would have just cut it off at the base, but, I mean, you know, he knows more about his plants than I do.
Or just don't feed it?
You would think it would die of starvation.
Yeah. So, Seymour, like you said, he climbs inside the plant with the knife to destroy it.
Which we can assume what happens, but it kind of fades to another scene after that. You just see him doing that.
The next day, Audrey and Mushnick and all the people, like the guy who eats the flowers, the old lady who's, you know, everybody in her life is dying around her. They all come into the shop, and there's another bulb on the plant.
Yep.
And it has another face in it, and that face is Seymour.
Of course, Seymour's.
So he has been eaten by the plant, by Audrey Jr. And that's Little Shop of Horrors.
And that's it.
That's it. Short
and
sweet.
In a nutshell. Like, what was it? Like an hour and 11 minutes?
Hour and 10 minutes.
Yep. Good stuff. Classic in the genre.
Absolutely. Body count, I had 5.
Oh, I have to do this again?
We always do the body count.
Well, no, I know that. I'm just an idiot. I'm so bad at, like, organizing shit. I have 5.
Okay, great.
Great. It was easy because all you had to do was
count the bulbs. Count the bulbs at the end of the movie. What would you give this? What would you give this for a star rating?
I'd probably give this, like, a 3.5.
Okay, I'm going to give it a 3.
Yeah.
It wasn't my favorite, but not my least favorite by any means.
I think I gave it the extra 0.5 because it's a classic. You know? Like, it's a solid movie. It had, like, an off-Broadway run and then a short Broadway run.
That's right.
That's what the 1986 one is based off of. It's actually based off the musical opposed to the original bit here. But I think it was really fun. It's a fun movie. It's plants eating people.
What do you have for fun tidbits about this movie?
Well, obviously, the director was Roger Corman, of course. The budget was approximately somewhere between $22,500 to $28,000.
Wow.
So, super low. And by today's standards, that would be $300,000, which is still extremely...
super low.
Like, that must have been crazy low for the 60s, is all
my
I'm
God.
Saying. Right. So, the film was partially cast with stock actors that Corman used in previous films. We kind of knew that.
Yeah.
So it was rumored that the film's shooting schedule was based on a bet that Corman could not complete the film within a certain time frame. This movie was shot in 2 days and a night.
That's it?
That is
Jesus.
It.
Jesus.
That theory was, of course, debunked by one of the actors, Mel Wells. It was shot in two days and one night. They utilized sets that were left from A Bucket of Blood, which was the movie he made before this one. From what I understand, according to one of the actors, the film was shot quickly in order to beat changing industry rules that would have prevented producers from buying out an actor's performance in perpetuity. I have no idea what that means. January 1st, 1960, new rules were going into effect requiring producers to pay all actors residuals for all future releases. Of their works. Again, no idea what that means. But this meant that Corman's B-movie business model would be permanently changed. And he would not be able to produce the low-budget films in the same way. Because obviously he still continued to do low-budget films for many years after the fact. But obviously it would have changed it. So to make this one simpler, he powered through it in a couple of days. 2.5 days. Slowly gained a cult following. Obviously, people love this movie. But by word of mouth, and in a double feature with Mario Bava's Black Sunday, which is a great flick, by the way. You should probably check that out if you haven't. And later with Last Woman on Earth. Excuse me. The film was the basis for an off-Broadway musical, which we just mentioned. Then in turn was adapted into a 1986 feature film, of course, starring the great Rick Moranis.
Yes.
And many, 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 many other cameos.
Rick Moranis is coming out of retirement for Spaceballs too.
You mean The Quest for More Money?
Yes.
Thank God! I can't wait for
it
that,
it was announced,
by the way.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
That's... Lone Star. I love that movie. For the reception, it's pretty positive. 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. Variety wrote, acting is pleasantly preposterous.
Yes.
Horticulturists and vegetarians will love this.
Aw. That's cute.
That's mainly the everything I have. Obviously, there's more stuff than that, but... Excuse me. My throat is very dry.
It's a lot of pollen in the air today, too. Mm. It looked like it was snowing out when I was on my way here.
Ew.
It was gross.
Anyways, yeah, this movie is pretty much available everywhere. I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it's in the public domain, but I know you can watch it for free directly from Wikipedia.
Yeah, I watched it on Tubi.
So. I watched it on Tubi, too.
The colorized version.
Yeah.
Which isn't really colorized. It goes into gray a lot.
Well,
which
you know.
It's fun. It's fun.
It's fine. It wasn't so distracting where I couldn't pay attention to the movie, you know?
Yeah.
However, I do love the 1986 Rick Moranis musical. I can't get enough of that movie. I literally watched that movie after I watched this one.
Oh, man. I should have done that.
right?
So, can you think of any other horror movies that are, like, about plants? Like, because I thought of, I mean, two come to mind. One good, one's a show that's the Happening. Where the plants cause
people. Oh, I hate The Happening.
It's terrible. The movie's fucking garbage. But it's, you know, for those of you who don't know The Happening, it is a M. Night Shyamalan movie. And it's where plants release toxins to protect themselves from growing populations of people. And the toxins make humans kill themselves. So if too many people are gathered in, like, one area, the plants release this toxin and people, like, jump off bridges, they hang themselves, they cut their own throats. Like, that's a little disturbing. It's a cool concept. It was just so terribly executed by M. Night Shyamalan and everybody in that movie, with the exception of John Leguizamo, who was wonderful in that film. And then the other one that came to mind was the video game, now HBO series, The Last of Us. Because that one is the spores, like...
Those are mushrooms.
Yeah.
I don't think mushrooms are considered plants. Well, maybe I'm getting confused.
I thought they were, like, spores that
they're
releasing.
Well, they're considered fungi.
Okay.
And a fungi is neither, like, a vegetable or a fruit. But that refers to that part of the... I guess, I mean, it grows, so it probably is some sort of plant, but...
I'll allow
it. Doesn't
it.
Have leaves or anything.
Yeah. Do any come to mind that you know of, or?
Yes, but I can't remember the name of it.
Do you know who's in it?
Donald Pleasance, the original Loomis.
Oh, is it They Live? No. They Live?
Not They Live.
I know the one you're talking about.
You're trying to look it up right now.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers? Is it?
No, that's Aliens.
Oh. Shit.
Right? The mutations?
Oh, I'm thinking, the I'm mutations. Thinking, you said Donald Pleasance. I'm thinking Donald Sutherland. That's why I thought, like.
Oh, who was in Invasion of the Body
Snatchers? Yes, that's what I'm thinking
movie.
Of, yeah.
The Mutations.
Gotcha,
1974,
okay.
Where, blah, 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 blah. It's the same thing. It's carnivorous plants. He's a scientist. yeah. Crossbreeding Venus flytraps with abducted college students. Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah, there's a few out there. That one wasn't too bad. That was a little bit slow for my taste. It's one of the older ones. I think that was from the 70s. Possibly before or after the original Halloween.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all I can really think of. I know there's 1,000 more.
Oh, there's got to be more.
There's 1,000 more. Like, yeah. Plants. The fun thing about plants is that they're alive. And it's nature. So, like, when does nature strike back? Like, it's kind of that kind of whole thing, you know?
Well, that's why if the happening had been more well done than thrown together.
The concept of the happening was really good.
Yeah.
But was executed like a piece of shit.
Well, Mark Wahlberg is god awful.
Not just that, but friggin'
Zooey Deschanel, terrible.
Well, I was referring to the director there.
M. Night Shyamalan, awful.
Yeah, awful. Like, not his best work.
No,
goodness. Actually, I think that's when I stopped watching his movies. I think I saw that one. I'm like, I am so done.
I'm so done with it, yeah. Yeah, no, I'm trying to think of more, and I can't. If you guys know of any plant horror movies, plant-based horror movies, probably like that, plant-based horror movies, hit us up at bakingtothebmovies@gmail.com. I'd like to explore that genre a little bit more than just The Happening and The Last of Us.
Yeah, more than like the mainstream shit.
Yeah, let us know. Let us know what you recommend. I'm more than happy to check them out. Steph, you did the recipe this week.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about what you made for us?
Sure did. In honor of our plant-loving friends, I am making a vegetarian meal today.
Really?
Yes. Maybe I shouldn't. but today we are going to be dining on black bean tacos.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah is right. So we got black beans. We have salsa. We have taco seasoning. You know, make it how you want. We have chipotles. You know, peppers. Garlic powder, salt, olive oil, cilantro, green onions. Oh, got to cut some of those. So basically what you do is you take essentially all of that.
Yep.
Throw it in a food processor. Obviously, the beans are canned.
Yeah.
So you don't have to cook them and soak them overnight and all that nonsense that you have to do with, you know, raw beans. So you throw everything into a food processor, mix it up, and then you throw this mixture onto a pan, hot pan. Heated pan, and you sear it. So you get like the kind of like seary, burny stuff.
And then like an adjectives like, it's like an adjectives hiccup there for a second.
Yeah,
I saw the wheels turning for a second when you were like, wait, not that word.
Well, you take it and you sear it like you would sear hash.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Does that make sense?
That makes
okay.
sense.
Okay. So anyways, so you sear it, and then I was going to get corn tortillas. I didn't.
Yeah.
I wanted to, because corn tortillas are...
Superior.
No. They're more traditional.
Yeah.
But they fall apart to pieces.
That's
so
true.
Anyways, so I have the other ones. So you put your mixture after it's done searing into your tortilla, throw some cheese in there, fold the tortilla, you know, make it into a taco, obviously, brush some oil on it, bake it, or throw it in your preheated oven, preheat it to 450, into your oven, let it cook there for about, I'd say 8 to 10 minutes.
Okay.
Flip it, again, cook it, so the tortilla itself gets nice and crispy.
Nice.
And the cheese melts.
Nice.
And there you have it, because it's a friggin' taco, and it's super easy.
Hell yeah.
One thing I do have to go along with it, because I'm a fancy bitch, is this morning I made a cilantro lime crema.
What?
Which involves sour cream, mayonnaise, cilantro, lime juice, of course, and jalapeno, and garlic, and salt, of course.
Ay, caramba.
Right? So I made that this morning. It's very delightful. And it's super exciting because I have fresh herbs now because it is summer.
Yay!
Makes the world of a difference. So anyways, so we got some dip-ins for our Siri. We have some dip-ins for our tacos.
Hell
so,
yeah.
It should be pretty. I'm hoping it's pretty good. I'm not a vegetarian by any means.
Same.
Obviously, if you want to make this vegan, you can just use vegan cheese and you know, if you're going to make the crema, just use whatever vegans use to get the, you know, the crema feel. I don't know what it is. I'm sure they do.
If you're vegan and you want to weigh in and let us know what you please let us know. We're always open to trying new things.
But, like, you know, obviously, like, sour cream and mayonnaise are not vegan.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And cheese is not vegan. But they do make vegan cheese.
They do. They do.
So, have you ever had vegan cheese?
I have not.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Which is weird because I lived with one for a while. Actually, no. She was, well, she claimed to be a vegetarian, but she totally ate fish.
Wait, who is this? Or can you tell me on...
I could tell you off air.
Oh.
You know who I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
That terrible, terrible individual.
Oh, man. I hope she had bad tofu that killed her at some point. That's terrible.
Okay, don't wish death on people, Ashley. That's pretty messed up.
Yeah, she's the worst.
I don't think she was the worst, to be perfectly honest. Yes. Which is sad, because that means I've had worse.
We know who you're talking about.
Right. So, anyways, but
okay,
yeah.
Okay, I take it back. I hope she didn't eat bad tofu and it killed her. I hope she ate bad tofu and it really fucked with her stomach for, like, a good weekend. I hope it ruined a weekend at some point in her life.
It probably did.
Yeah.
I'd be willing to bet that that probably happened to her.
Good.
Anyways, stop being mean. So, anyways, yeah, she would cook some stuff here and there, and it wasn't anything wild. Like, yeah, she made tofu. She had, like, that... Like the sauce, like the vegan, like whatever meat, ground, whatever.
Yeah, bacon or whatever.
Bacon. Did you try the tofurkey? No. Is it delicious? No. Was that a tofurkey? I think it might have been. Or it was something like that. I don't know.
I remember, I'm not going to name her, but I remember going to Friendsgiving one year when you were all living in that apartment. And I remember walking in and, like, there was, like, a crazy spread. And I remember pulling you aside and saying, what did so-and-so make? And you pointed it out. And I went, good. I just wanted to know what to avoid. Because I got everything else.
And that's nothing against vegetarians.
No, goodness. No, I've eaten some incredible vegan food. And I've eaten some incredible vegetarian dishes. Same. I am not opposed to that lifestyle. I'm not opposed to that food.
What we're saying is we're opposed to this person.
This person was god awful.
And it just so happens that she was a vegetarian. But she wasn't because she ate fish. So shut your mouth.
Yeah, like I think it's great if people find a diet that works for them where you feel good after you eat, you don't get sick on anything. Yeah. It's just that this person was horrendous, but more so than her personality was her cooking. Her cooking was god awful. And I just, like, she would offer to, like, make food and I'd be like, I'm good. I'm just gonna go to Wendy's. See you later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's pretty bad.
It took me a minute to remember. I was like, oh, yeah, I trauma blocked that shit.
I wish I could. But anyways, yeah, you could totally make this vegan if you want. If not, it's vegetarian. I'm hoping it's delicious. I'm counting on it being delicious. It's not the first vegetarian dish that I've made.
Yeah.
So, and those have been pretty good.
Yeah.
So I remember, so yesterday I was mentioning to you that, oh, Andy was off and he went, I usually go grocery shopping on Fridays, but since he was off, I made him do it.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to, because I still had to work.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, sure, which was probably the wrong mistake. He came back with 3 bags of fries.
Oh, my God.
But whatever, it's fine. And a bunch of, like, chicken. But whatever, it's fine. And he's like, okay, so tacos. I'm like, yeah. And he was like, is there, like, any, like, where's the protein for the tacos? And I'm like, no, they're... It's a vegetarian taco. It's black beans. He's like, oh, I thought there was going to be a real protein. I'm like, don't be like that, you jackass. Although, this should be pretty good.
Yeah, I'm excited, and I'm also starving. So I'm really,
agreed.
Really...
Let's get this shit on the road.
All right. So you can find this recipe over on our Instagram. Again, that's at @BakingToTheBMovies. You can reach us directly at bakingtothebmovies@gmail.com. Let us know if you tried this recipe. If you have any recommendations, vegetarian, vegan, whatever you want to throw our way, we're open to new stuff. If you have any suggestions for movies down the line that you think would pair well with a dish, absolutely hit us up. And again, be sure to like and subscribe and follow and share and give us a 5-star rating, guys. We want to... We want that sponsorship. Not even HelloFresh anymore. We just want a good sponsorship.
I've heard nothing but, like, bad things about HelloFresh,
too. They fell off. HelloFresh fell off, I think.
Have they?
Watch. Somebody.
I don't feel like any of those, like, meal delivery or, like, meal kit services really have done that well.
It would be one thing if they sent you, like, the non-perishables and then, like, gave you, like, a list of, like, okay, here's what you need to buy to make it. Like, go to the grocery store, get a pepper or an onion or whatever. But, like, here's the rest of, like, here's perfectly portioned whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that would be one thing. But it's just, like, sending, like, fish and meat through the mail, like, dairy, like, any, like, and I understand people do it every day. And it's just, I feel like the quality has dropped off so significantly.
I'm sure the quality is not great. I would not want to eat, like, chicken or anything that came.
No, goodness, no.
Like,
I don't
like,
trust
I've
it.
Ordered, like, meat and stuff through the mail as well. Yeah. And it's, you know, like, super quick shipping. It's frozen as hell by the time it gets here. Like,
right.
I've never been concerned about something going bad because of it being June and I'm sweating my ass off right now. So that's never been an issue, but that's all they do. It's not a meal kit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I'd be very sketched out by getting something like that.
One of my neighbors during the height of COVID, when none of us were going anywhere, she no longer lives in the building. Thank you, God. But she subscribed to, like, three different meal like mail meal systems.
Why would you need to subscribe to three?
I don't know. I think she was like panicking that, like, you know, the stores were empty. Like, there's no toilet paper. Like, it's one of those things where,
maybe,
like, I'm just going to order. I'm going to do all these, like, meal prep things so I can, like, store my food. And maybe. I don't know what the fuck happened. I don't know if she went somewhere or she forgot about them, but a bunch of them got delivered
and they
weren't picked up by her for days. And our lobby smelled like rotting meat. I remember, like, one of the guys from HelloFresh, they were delivering HelloFresh, went to the lobby, saw the stack of, like, old boxes that he had brought, like, a week prior. So he went up to her actual apartment, which is down the hall from mine, and put it outside her door and, like, put a note on it and, like, knocked and left. And I didn't look at the note. I'm assuming it meant, like, you have more boxes in the lobby that maybe you forgot about or whatever. But then, like, of course, we weren't going anywhere during COVID. And
right.
I remember a few days went by and I, like, went out in the hall and there were, like, three more boxes stacked up in the hallway from, like, meal prep. It reeked. And, like, finally somebody called my old landlord, the nice one, and let her know what was going on. And she went in there with the full cleanup crew. Like, all the produce had gone bad. All the meat. Like, did the woman die? I have no idea. I just know that there were, like, six or seven different boxes containing food that had gone bad in the span of, like, a week and a half that she either just wasn't home to get, forgot to cancel, was sick and couldn't get out of bed. I have no idea what the fuck that, but ever since I'm just like, I'm good.
I hear, Andy's told me before, one of his coworkers subscribes, I don't know if it's HelloFresh or if it's one of the others, but the portions on them are wildly
inaccurate.
So, yeah. Like, you could get this much of the one meal, and then the next week you get the same meal, and the portion size is not remotely close to each other,
Jesus.
Like, at all. Like, it's either super small or way too big. It makes no sense.
So, I've said it before, like, my mom is the baker of the family. And when I have a question about baking or cooking something, I call her, and she'll walk me through it step by step. Like, she's great. But if you're looking just for, like, quick, easy, maybe even fun things to make, I found that, like, Instagram is just, like, a treasure trove of just recipes that people have, like, been like, you know what, I'm bored, I'm going to try this, and they turn out great because I've tried them, and I'm like, oh, shit, like, that was 20 minutes out of my day, and now I got pasta for a whole week. Like, I can feed a family. Like, it's, yeah.
That's awesome.
Don't do the meal order kits, guys. Just go on
Instagram.
Yeah,
they're really
not
worth it. Like, they make it sound, like, super convenient, but
and it's expensive.
It's not. And it is expensive.
It's expensive. Just,
like, you know the amount of food you should probably eat.
Yeah.
Like,
there's enough resources out there where if you really want to do meal prep. And I found,
well, there goes our HelloFresh sponsorship.
It's
I'm
fine.
Just kidding. I'm kidding.
That's what you get when you don't sponsor us early on. I was all for it at the early stages. Now I don't care.
Right? And all we do is cook food.
What's the other big podcasting one? Simply Safe, the home security system. Simply Safe, get on board. No, like if you want to do it, like there's plenty of resources out there that can show you how to like meal prep if you're looking to like make meals for a week. And I found that Instagram is like a treasure trove of just easy.
Yeah, like I've done that stuff before, yeah. Like to meal prep and stuff. It's not hard.
It's not hard at all.
It is not hard. And if you're smart about it, it can be very cost effective.
Exactly. So. Exactly.
Even in today's rates. Yeah.
I love like the one pan dinners. Like you throw everything in a pan and cook it for, you know, 40 minutes and then you just distribute it in your meal thingies and you're fucking good to go. Those are amazing.
I've gotten into sous vide-ing.
Oh, okay. All right.
And I've sous vide quite a few things. That is so awesome. It is so awesome. Like you could get the perfectly cooked whatever.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about just getting a giant, like, beef roast and just sous-viding it.
Yeah.
And then I could just, like, slice it like roast beef. Just
nice.
Sandwiches. I'm like, hey, Andy, you know, we could possibly stop buying that crap for, like, your lunches and stuff. And we'll just, you know, sous-vide a giant roast beef. He's like, that does sound pretty good. That
sounds damn good.
Yeah. I've been sous-viding pork loin lately.
Oh, nice.
Friggin' incredible.
I'm just getting hungrier as we're sitting here. I know.
We should probably wrap this up.
Guys. Thank you. We're going to go eat these tacos.
Hell yeah.
Thank you so, so much for being with us today. We will be back in a couple of weeks with a brand new episode, a brand new movie, a brand new recipe. And yeah, just enjoy your summer so far. Stay hydrated. Stay cool. Remember your SPF. Don't forget your sunscreen. The sun is no joke.
Very true.
It's very true.
Very true.
Okay. I guess that's it.
Well, I guess that is all.
Steph, thank you so, so much for being here with me today. As always, I truly appreciate it.
You're very welcome. It's my house.
Steph, thank you so much for letting me in your house today. All right, let's go eat these tacos. This has been Baking to the B-Movies. My name is Ashley.
My name is Steph.
And we'll catch you guys soon.
Bye. Bye.